You're listening to Pushing the Envelope, Life at the Cutting Edge of Customs Innovation. I'm Tom Muller with the Cross Border Research Association. On this show, we explore the frontiers of customs creativity in conversations with customs and logistics experts, technology innovators, research scientists, and other leaders in the field. Industry insiders call this show the PennCast because it's part of PennCP, a network for boosting customs innovation funded by the European Union under the Horizon 2020 program. Today, I'm speaking with Rupa Ganguly, the CEO and founder of Inclusive Trade Limited, a marketplace for sustainable micro and small businesses. Welcome, Rupa. Thanks for joining me on the show.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Well, we have been talking in the past on this podcast with a range of customs officials, sort of customs insiders, customs officials, research scientists, logistics entrepreneurs, leaders in intergovernmental bodies like the World Customs Organization. Today, we're speaking with you, and you're in a sense a customs end user, someone who is outside of customs, but whose work is intimately involved with customs and logistics. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. So I make no bones about it. I am not a customs expert. I'm definitely a customs user, quite a lot of it actually, because we work with small parcels. Being an e-commerce channel and a marketplace, we work with loads of small and micro businesses actually from different parts of the world. And there's a lot of picking and dropping and returns and shipping and all the rest of that. And often that is cross-border. Sometimes it's local as well. But cross-border obviously requires a lot of customs knowledge, customs agreement usage, the understanding of the best methods of sending stuff. So in a sense, yes, I suppose customs is a very integral part that sort of seamlessly almost knits the whole process together, if you like, for us. So yeah, it needs to work. otherwise, we have a lot of problems. It's interesting. It's really been an organic journey, really. And it started off in actually a wholesale market in Mumbai in India, where it was literally on my route to university. And, you know, I kind of started buying leftover pieces of inventory, fabrics, and creating garments, which I then sold on to university students and, you know, just friends of friends of friends, which kind of grew. And my passion, I suppose, for textiles grew with that. I was very keen to understand more about how, you know, trade rules and trade laws and agreements and, you know, all of those impacted, the industry that I loved so much, you know, how one could be more competitive in that industry, really speaking. And that kind of led my journey from those markets into studying all of these sort of economics and trade and going to the WTO, working at the International Trade Organization. And then further my journey through the UN, working through as an advisor for trade and textiles, working with lots of small businesses across Africa, Asia, Latin America. And I suppose the more I suppose you're exposed to sort of these amazing pieces of knowledge in so many different parts of the world, the more you realize that actually there's a lot of commonality, but there's also a lot of challenges that we all seem to have, but we don't seem to quite address it. It seems like there's always that knowledge gap, or there's always that kind of piece that is missing. And I think Spinner was set up literally as a kind of a solution to that, where it was like, let's bring more women together who have these amazing skill sets, but have no place to, you know, showcase their products or connect them with organizations where they could benefit. And Inclusive Trade was born literally out of that outcome, if you like, because we had all these amazing products and they were being sold sort of one-on-one, and it kind of brings you back to the element of customs and everything where, you know, I guess transactions, like, you know, again, payments, I suppose payments and customs are two things which really determine whether you can get a product across to a buyer or not. And that's kind of the genesis. That's where Inclusive Trade was born, as a marketplace for ethical suppliers, small businesses that really had sustainable and ethical products. And, you know, linking them to consumers like you and me, as well as businesses who were looking for those kind of products. And it felt like a really simple thing to do. You know, you've got one amazing set of people on one side and one amazing set of people on the other. Just all you need is technology and a platform. Now, if only it was that simple.
There's a big gap there between the wonderful people who produce and the wonderful people who want to purchase. Yeah, big challenge. in 100, more than 100 different countries in the world that you're working?
Yeah, so we have, I would say, well, we've got lots of kind of small businesses that we've connected with over 97 countries. But, I mean, we're working closely, I would say, with countries in, let's say, Africa, parts of Central America, parts of Asia. So definitely three or four continents, and Europe as well. So definitely we've got loads of cross-border in that sense. And most often we're working with producers and, small businesses, if you like, who are not necessarily always in the biggest of big cities. Sometimes they're in smaller towns and locations. And, so that kind of almost adds on another level of complexity in trying to move products, across, you know, even locally to get it to a point where it can in fact make its way to the next, point in sort of the consumer, if you like.
Right, right. This work must produce, must make for many, many interesting customs experiences, customs stories. Do you want to share a few of your illuminating or frustrating customs experiences?
Well, I definitely could write a book on that. Let's see. This is a funny one because it deals with the 10 pairs of socks. And, I think one would think, I mean, how much more complicated can it be? You're just literally selling 10 pairs of socks. So just to sort of, in a nutshell, there was a consumer who was in New York who bought, these amazing 10 pairs of socks, made by this lovely producer. And, they had to be shipped from London to New York. Doesn't sound very complicated in all of that. We had all our, given our background, with trade and knowledge of sort of, you know, HS codes and the rest of that, you know, this doesn't seem like a very challenging thing to do is to send 10 pairs of socks. However, as things have it, the company that was going to pick up the products in the sense, the logistics company, picked it up and, you know, as usual, it was shipped and we presumed you're looking at our kind of, you know, looking at the tracking, etc. Oh, it should be there in like, you know, maybe maximum a week, maybe 7 days, you know. 10 days on, 15 days on, we figure out that these socks have not reached New York from London. I mean, it would have probably been faster if I actually jumped on a flight anyway, and potentially would have cost me the same eventually. So this 10 pair of socks, which probably were somewhere around, you know, £10 per pair of socks kind of things. We're talking about a very small, you know, this had still gotten stuck somewhere between London and New York and it had just gone into a black hole. Suddenly, right. 10 days on, when we discovered it wasn't there, obviously this poor customer was not very pleased. We then found out that, it was actually stuck at customs in the United States. Huh. I'm like, socks, 10 pairs of socks. Surely it's not very complex. Wow. We then discovered through a series of 5, 6, 7, I'm trying to think how many phone calls and emails and backwards and forwards, that apparently there was a line missing and one piece of paper missing somewhere. And I was like, why is there even a piece of paper involved? This was all electronic. We'd put everything in. There should be no problem. But apparently there was one piece of paper missing, which somehow didn't have the right code on it. And I cannot for the life of me understand how that was the case. But anyway, that was the case. We discovered that. We said, okay, no worries. We're sending you the electronic information, the digital con, just, you know, clear it. And hopefully that will make, you know, make it all go away. But of course, that would be too easy. Before we knew it, they were very efficiently sending those socks back to us in London.
Oh, no.
So the socks were sent back to us in London, which, by the way, arrived very, very quickly. And then
I'm surprised it didn't get stuck in customs. Yeah.
No, it didn't get stuck in customs this time around. But by this time, the information had gone to New York or whichever port over there saying that, this is the sock. But then, of course, they couldn't find it because they'd sent it back.
Right.
So we had to resend this pair of socks. These 10 pairs of socks back to the customer, which this time around, we're like, what piece of paper was missing? So apparently, somewhere along the line, you know, when a courier or a logistics company picks up documents and a parcel, there are a bunch of papers. And I only wish this could be made even easier because you've got them in triplicate or duplicate or whatever number of, you know, documents. And somewhere in this whole process, one sheet had gone missing. which right. is, if you think about it, human error, sure, that's possible.
Going to happen. Yeah.
But the idea of it, that for 10 pairs of socks, you've got 6 pieces of paper of which one has gone missing, and now those 10 pairs of socks have made their way backwards and forwards between London and New York, not to mention the carbon emissions, not to mention the money spent, not to mention just about everything along the way, right? And the frustration at both sides of
your frustration, your customer's frustration, the customs frustration of having these socks with a missing piece of paper. I mean, no one actually came out ahead in this odyssey, sock odyssey.
Exactly. And I think this is just one example of like a B2C, like, you know, and this is where the problem lies with a B2C consumer base, which is growing and, you know, with internet marketing and internet online sales completely on the way up, because, you know, we are looking at a generation now, especially of the younger consumers who are online, 8 hours a day, more or less. They buy everything online. And whether it's peer-to-peer selling, whether it's marketplaces, whatever it is, we're talking about a lot of online logistics with small package trade. And if we can't get that right, you know, I think we're losing millions, if not trillions, in the bargain, because this consumer is not going to have patience. They're not going to wait around for another chance. You know, they're not going to give you another chance, basically.
No,
so I think we have to really think carefully about what does the consumer really want? What does a business today want? And how can we, as sort of business providers and stakeholders and customs officials and policymakers, how can we make it easier? How can we integrate and collaborate to make sure that, you know, these kind of silly things don't happen? You know, there are enough problems out there anyway. We don't need these ones to kind of
We don't
add
need to
them.
Compound it. Now, were you able to do an analysis, a postmortem of this sock disaster, and sort of figure out what the specific problems were?
We got some information. I think we did kind of push it a bit forward to try and understand exactly for that reason, saying, you know, we can't have this happening again, right? Can't just sort of shove it on the carpet and think it's going to go away. So we did explore a little bit, I would say. We came to some sort of a dead end for whatever reason. And there was a point where that paper just disappeared. And again, you know, if you think about the enormous journeys, I mean, quite often things make, this whole point of having so many pieces of documents and papers is extremely frustrating for, I would say, these kind of small package trade small packages, if you like. Because obviously when you're doing large shipments and, you know, pallets and containers and stuff, I get it. I mean, you know, there's a certain logic to it. But when you're looking at something that's worth $50 or £100 or, you know, something that is so small, it almost doesn't make sense for me to print 3 sets of, like, in triplicate and whatnot, and then have one sheet of paper go missing in the middle of all of that. So it really should not be required, in my view. And I think the more digital we can go, the more transparent it can be and more simple it can be, where, like, you know, the language used is for normal humans and not customs officials, because people don't know acronyms. People don't understand these kind of things, you know. You need to make it crystal clear so my 7-year-old can understand it, basically.
Uh-huh. And so, if I understand you correctly, your sense of the transparency of the logistics/customs world into which you put this box of socks is not great, right? You don't know, you yourself, who are an expert end user of customs, don't know what's going on once it enters that black box, as it were, that pipeline.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the other thing there is that exactly that. And if it's there, if the facilities are there, this is not always visible to the users. So, you know, I have no, I'm 100% sure there's a lot of stuff going on in the background. And I do speak to people and I understand there's a lot of, you know, development in this area. But unfortunately, that doesn't always filter down to those of us who are using it every day. And even if I theoretically know it, I don't often know how to put it into practice or integrate it into the systems that I'm using. Or they need to talk to each other without, you know, creating further bugs in the system where, because I've integrated something, now they don't talk to each other and I create even more problems.
Right.
So I think there is a bit of I think there's something to be said about technology talking to each other and, you know, making sure that all these systems can actually understand the same language as well. So I think there is something in that to be had. But it also, just equally, I mean, while there's a lack of transparency, I think there's also sometimes a lack of communication of some sort. Like, for example, you would imagine, I won't go into lots of details, but there was another instance where we had a huge shipment that came in from another country, and that country had a particular customs agreement with the country that was importing it, into which we were importing it. And because that agreement had not been used a lot, it was one of those trade agreements which is there for the use, but it wasn't really used. And it would allow the importing country to use a duty-free for those particular lines. And, you know, so it's all correct, except that it was very rarely used. And as a result, again, the boxes were held at shipment. The shipment was held at customs because in that particular instance, the customs officials were not 100% sure that the paperwork was right, whereas it was right. It was just that that agreement was so rarely used or almost never used that they were not aware of it, or the people particularly looking at it were not completely sure. And that wasted almost 5 days at the port for no reason.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so yeah, we've talked about the recipients, your customers, but also your producers must face a considerable barrier in terms of 97 countries, each with their own customs rules, regulations, maybe different arrangements with different destinations. How do you go about educating the people that produce the goods that you sell to the world?
So, for instance, we haven't activated all 97 countries primarily for that reason, because, I mean, we'd love to, we've got demand and everything, but it's just too complicated at the moment. It's just too complicated to try and move things, just if you had to think of it as an absolute free market economy where literally demand and supply are matched based on real, you know, demand, and what supply there is. It doesn't really work like that, right? Because I think a lot of small businesses themselves choose not to do cross-border trading because they don't want to get in the hassles of having to deal with these kind of, issues. And there is an actual fear of cross-border because, while we say this a lot where, being able to do cross-border trade is the way forward. I mean, we've got 90% of the world's businesses are small businesses. I mean, globally, that's the number. We're talking about something like 400 million small micro businesses around the world. But the problem with that is that trying to make cross-border trade accessible for these, never mind 400 million, even let's say, 100,000 or 200,000 or 300,000 of these small businesses, it's really complicated because, as you just mentioned, there are loads of different agreements between countries, and trying to understand all of that and sensibly use it requires a trade expert to really, guide you.
But just think of the economic loss. Just think of the personal loss of these individuals who aren't able to sell their goods because the rules are too complicated, or they're not known, or they're not being enforced properly. There's a friction in the system there that costs real people a lot of money, and a lot of think about the benefits of a frictionless system where, someone living anywhere can see on your platform some fantastic item that they'd never heard of before, and with a rich history, with an artisanal background, with something that really brings it to life, and actually make it arrive. And that's good.
It.
Again, good for everybody. Your ultimate goal, I think you've explained it to me in the past, is sort of to become the Amazon of sustainability, or the Amazon free trade, fair trade. That is a really worthy goal, because that becomes, a recipe for organic economic growth, from the roots up, right?
Exactly. And the thing is that, there is a value proposition on both sides of the equation, right? It's not just that you're trying to push something and sell something here. There's a true demand for sustainable goods. People, and more importantly, like, sustainability is such a widely used term today, right? It's so kind of, you just use it because it's the thing to do. But actually, if you think about it, what does it really mean? I mean, other than the definitions that are out there, I mean, what does it really mean? It basically means that, it's something that you can use and use and use and and not have a terrible impact on either whatever you're doing today and hopefully in the future, right? And the thing is that how better to sort of look at it rather than, I mean, you don't want to reinvent the wheel 100 times over. You want to look at what's out there and then kind of link back to that. So we, for example, use the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN as our kind of background to looking at sustainability. And we pick a few things and think about what we can work on in terms of, you know, supporting these small businesses to demonstrate really, to evidence, to demonstrate what their impact is. And quite often, actually, more often than not, these small businesses just genuinely are creating positive impact in their environment, in their local communities. We know today that, you know, 65% of employment is generated globally through small businesses, and that is something that is incredible. Can you imagine if these small businesses were efficient, if they were able to trade more and grow into bigger businesses, fundamentally being good businesses, you know, we could be looking at a different kind of planet altogether, right? Because everyone has a key interest in this. And this doesn't have to be just non-profit or for-profit or whatever. I think it's a combination. I think it's a combination of people and entities coming together so that, you know, we have a common end. We have a common goal to sort of, you know, take things to another level, really.
Yeah. And a lot of the customs experts, customs insiders that I talk with talk about their kind of statutory and job duty to facilitate trade. I mean, they're not just a neutral or a negative on trade. They are actually tasked with speeding up and empowering trade because that's part of their mission. And yet, you know, that's not what I'm hearing from you necessarily. And again, I don't want to point the blame at any particular individual or in a particular part of the chain, but the chain has rust and the chain is not working. And whether it's, you know, the individual courier who picked up the goods or somewhere along the way, the paperwork that wasn't produced, you know, and I think your point is very, very true, too, that the word buzzwords like sustainability and, you know, environmentally friendly, there's a lot of talk in customs about greening supply chains as part of, you know, are you aware of that? Is that something that has crossed your radar?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I've read up some stuff about that kind of thing. But to be honest, on an everyday basis, other than local kind of options, or for example, the kind of options that come up when you're trying to choose the delivery service that is the best option for your whatever, you know, point A to point B product that needs to be taken, there's always some sort of a green option. But then again, it's just a bit like, it's a bit like, you know, any product out there that says, oh, it's green. I don't actually know why it's green. I don't know what real change it's making versus something that is, well, quote unquote, not green, let's say, right? And again, if there are really good developments out there, I think this needs to be communicated to the wider audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the kind of the underlying purpose of the PenCP project, of which this podcast is a part, is to create a network of a 360 degree view of the customs world, and drive innovation, drive improvements just by people, you know, who typically in their normal walk of life don't spend time together, an energizing time together and talking about common problems, talking about common solutions and so on. And at the end of the day, so many of our conversations end up being, hey, we're on the same side of this issue. We all want, you know, sustainability. We all want gender equality. We all want things that are better for the environment. We all want, you know, economic growth. We want people who are making great stuff to be able to sell to people who want great stuff. And so ultimately, it's, again, I keep thinking of the image of drag or of friction in the system. That's, no one really is set out to just create this. It just happens. But
it just happens. Yeah.
Fix it to, you know, oil the works.
Exactly. And I think this is a great initiative because obviously, I mean, the fact that, you know, you're speaking with people from all around, I think, you know, literally and bringing this together, I think is really a positive move forward because a lot more of that needs to happen to make sure that, you know, we don't waste valuable time as well because, you know, time is precious. You know, we only have one planet at this point anyway. We only have this race of humanity that we're all of us. I mean, I know it sounds all very worthy, but at the end of the day, you know, if we can't sort of, we don't live on this planet doesn't survive. I mean, what else have we got, right? So there is actually an end game there if you don't get it right.
There is, exactly. And you're talking about, you know, really converting buzzwords into real results.
Real action.
And that's, it's time for that because we've got a lot of greenwashing and a lot of talk, but you know, it's time for action, right? The clock is ticking.
The clock is ticking. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you know, you must run into certain types of items, I don't know, handcrafted items or secondhand products and so on, that cause a particular level of complication in the customs world. Is that right?
Yes, definitely. I think given, you know, I mean, the HS coding system obviously is what most of us use for sort of determining what product is going from point A to point B. The problem is, though, that sometimes products these days, I mean, the more creative we get, the more innovative we get, which is great because I think we should be. We should be using resources in a really, you know, efficient manner. The problem, though, is that often you can't actually define what the product is very clearly. Now, is it technology? Is it clothing, for example, you know, and you do have issues with things like that. Then trying to define the material content in it, because sometimes now you've got a mix of different materials which don't necessarily pop up on a customs database in the simplest perspective, if you like. And then handcrafted items particularly, like, for example, you've got recycled materials that have been, you know, taken away, I mean, basically been saved, if you like, from going into landfill and things, and created into other products or waste. Like, for example, we have a factory that we work with, and their products. And basically these are, you know, cutoffs. Like when you're making a pair of jeans, you have a lot of waste that comes out because you're making the pattern and there's a lot of bits that fall off. Now imagine all of that is collected and then transformed into yarn, which is what you need to make into a fabric. And then the fabric is then constructed into a garment or anything else. And now in trying to sometimes define all those components, and then if you're trying to then integrate something that has a potential heat sensor or something like that, you know, it's complicated because where do you stick that product? What is that product, you know? And trying to define these kind of innovative products, which then are further handcrafted because then they're, you know, made by hand to put them into a... So what do you stick them as? Are they in HS62? Are they in HS61? Are they like just a 63? Who knows what they are, right? The textiles industry is really interesting because, you know, I mean, think about it. People go to space wearing textiles, right? The astronauts have textiles on. I mean, there's so much of textiles, geotextiles, like they're on the roads and everything. So if you think about it, textiles is a really innovative space where a lot is happening, but often we don't quite capture it right. Like, and at the highest levels of technology, it is captured, I suppose, because, you know, you put it into a technology block, you don't really talk about it as a textile anymore. But if it's a wearable for you and me, you know, if you're just going to wear a band, that's a fabric band, but actually measures your heartbeat or something, what is that? Is that a gadget or is that fabric or is that a bracelet? Is it, you know, what is it? So there's all of these kind of issues that also, I mean, for me, having had some trade background, I start digging further into thinking, you know, what could I define this as? And I start to look at the rules. But the thing is that not everyone's going to do that. And even for me to do that, I can't do that for every single product, right? So I'm just going to be wasting time doing that. So I would love to see some solutions in that space. And if there is something out there, I think the likes of me would want to know about it.
You're making me think of conversations I've already had with people, a couple of guys at Hurricane Commerce, which is a data platform for speeding, for gathering and classifying and speeding, the e-commerce in particular. And on the other hand, Ricardo Trevino Chapa of the World Customs Organization, you know, these different perspectives are all talking about the problems that you're talking about and how to solve them. It'd be great to get you in the same room with them and have a working session where you bring in a few samples and say, okay,
what do we call this? Yeah, exactly.
Because again, this is all rooted in people in a bunch of different countries, sometimes in the countryside, producing goods that will really help their families as well as help the world economy. So these are real problems.
I mean, the problem, you know, the other issue is that I feel, and obviously this is always open for debate, but, you know, I feel like because it's so challenging sometimes to do things cross-border, you're starting to get lots of local hubs where there's great stuff happening, but it doesn't get out of that local community or that local area. And it's great for that local area. And I think it's brilliant to have more of these local hubs all around the world. But imagine just how much more amazing it would be if all these local hubs could connect and not just exchange data, but imagine if you could collaborate to create products as well, right? Because it's in the power of the people. It's in the power of literally all these innovative things that are coming out of it. If only we could create a place where it was easy for people to do this stuff virtually.
Right. So it's not only getting their goods across borders from one place to another, but also the creators themselves networking and sharing ideas. And I have this material and we could do with that. And
yep.
And that could all be happening on your platform or somewhere.
It could, you know, definitely. It sounds so exciting. I mean, absolutely. Like, we're all for trying to encourage innovative, creative talent from around the world. And that's the kind of focus of the platform where, you know, we want to scale it up and be able to really, you know, support the demand we have, because this demand is not going down. It's only going up. So it's really about getting your kind of ducks in a row sort of thing to make sure that you can cater to this demand, this growing demand.
Well, while we're at it, we can throw in that the end user could be chipping in their 2 bits worth of ideas or
inspiration
or requests. You know, if you're networking,
absolutely.
Network the entire chain. Yeah.
I mean, there's also great, there's enough data to show there's a trend of, especially with, as I keep saying, the younger generation, which is kind of going to become, you know, the people who are going to define everything that we buy and sell in the next 10 years. If you think about it, people want to be involved. They want to be involved. They want to be a part of the whole kind of process. And especially, you know, the 20-year-olds today and the ones who are like in their early teens or 12-year-olds who are becoming, you know, who are going to in the next 10 years be the defining factor. They, you know, because they've grown up in the digital world, for them, everything is literally available online or on your phone, right? It's a mobile technology world. So, apps and communicating with each other, like, they think nothing of putting a little tweet out there, or they think nothing of putting it on TikTok or, you know, or whatever it is. It's like it's a few seconds and it's done, right? So think of the power of that generation if they were able to communicate and actually provide insights and inputs towards developing things that they really want, right? And things that they don't like as well, because that'll save you and me a lot of, you know, time, effort and money. Or not trying to sort of sample test 100 type, you know, things. And again, just sort of made to order rather than just trying to create and hope that there's a demand for it.
Yeah. So it harnesses their creativity. It makes it more targeted. And it also involves people, everyone in the process of producing things that are wanted, that are desired. That's a win-win. That's a win-win situation.
Is. And imagine if customs could just, you know, we could have no problems across borders. All of it was great. People could just say, I want this. I want it like that. And boom, it's made in the right place and it's sent to you. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's just how amazing it could be.
That's the dream scenario. So let's go through just in conclusion, let's go through a wish list of things that you would like to see from the broader customs world. And again, it may be from trans shippers and logistics experts. It may be from, you know, from customs or from related entities, postal services and so on. But if you were to go down a list of desires, if you could put, you know, the magic wand and solve some of these problems that you're running into in 97 countries and probably considerably more in the future, what would your wish list be?
So I think the first thing would be, for me, having a simplistic, you know, one portal, kind of a digital thing where I could find things, whether it's about, you know, agreements, or if I put in a customs code, for example, I put in something, I know exactly from point A to point B, this is what is going to happen. And there aren't like 5 answers to it. I just want one answer, right? So some kind of a integrated portal which works in the US and in the UK and in Australia and wherever, Singapore or India or wherever, like all of us are able to see the same thing, right? That would be a dream to have something like that. I think the second point would be, simply put, like with postal services again, and, you know, I mean, hats off to postal services around the world. They do an amazing job because they get to places that no one else can. So I have absolute regard for postal services. The problem, though, is that sometimes postal services don't speak to each other properly. And as a result, when you use postal services, there's always a black hole in between when it kind of crosses that borderline somewhere. And then for a bit, it just goes boom. You can't see anything. And then it kind of appears on the other side. It's a bit like, it's like a black hole of some sort. It gets sucked in and then boom, it's thrown out. It's a bit like Star Wars, really, if you ask me.
If you do rematerialize.
If you do rematerialize. Exactly. In the same form, by the way. I don't want any changes in form here. Imagine, again, if the postal service system across the world, often it's challenging to send things through postal services because you never know if the customer is going to really get it with customs paid, for example, on the other end, right? And it's a horrible, nasty feeling. I bet you've had it, I've had it, I think everybody in the world has had it, where you receive a package and then suddenly you get a bill that's 10 times the size of that package. And you're just like, really? No, I'm not going to pay that. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I don't want it. But just imagine, if you go back to like the sense of sustainability, which is really core to my kind of whole, I'm very passionate about it. And I feel like on the one hand, there's a frustration and I'm really annoyed about that situation. But also think about how many people have been involved in trying to get that product out to another person, right? And it's gone through all of that, the packaging, the shipping, everything. And now all it has to do is do the whole process back again, right? It's just such a waste of time, effort, material, everything. So I think that, just having more transparency and ability for people to use their postal systems to sometimes, to a lot of consumers or peer-to-peer buyers and stuff, there's no other option other than postal services. And as a result, you just rely on that. The problem is, though, that the receiver then lands up having to pay a huge sum because, I don't know, the person hasn't filled it in right or whatever it is. So with this whole concept of peer-to-peer, selling increasing, you've got to understand peer-to-peer selling is like just you and me selling stuff, right? And we're not customs experts. We're not people who necessarily know everything. So you're going to make mistakes. The more complex it is, the more mistakes you're going to make. So if you have to design something that, literally a friend wants to send a friend that has no knowledge of customs, how would you do it? I think that would be the kind of exam question over here. Mm-hmm. So I think that's simplicity, that kind of ability to know that I can use my postal system, but I can just get it right. So I think that green element of it needs to be very crystal clear. What is green? What isn't green? What are we trying to make green? Where are we now? Right? Don't just say it's green because is it really? I mean, what part of it is green, So I think that is the part of sustainable customs and logistics is something that really, I would say, is ripe for development right now. So I think that is my third point. And finally, very, very finally, and I think I've said this before, is just make everything digital. Get rid of paper. Just get rid of paper. Seriously. Just get rid of paper. I want my socks to reach my customer, not because it's lost one piece of paper on the way somewhere, So just get rid of paper. I think that would be my final point.
Right. A critical point. And again, so we're talking about simplicity, and digitalization is one of the key elements of simplicity. Keep it simple. Transparency and communication. So you know what's going on when you put your parcel into the pipeline, and all along the way, you can query that pipeline and figure out what's going on. At the same time, the duty of customs and related fields to communicate to you what they're doing, what their aims are, what this greening of supply chains really means. And I think you'd be very pleasantly surprised to learn some of the things that are actually going on. But if they don't communicate it to you, how are you going to know? I mean, this is something where, and once again, communication, getting in the same room or getting on the same space, getting in the same web portal and discussing these things across the different borders, not only literal borders, but borders of our different expertise is going to be the way forward on this. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
It's very exciting. I mean, your experiment, or experiments. I mean, your whole life has been an experiment.
An experiment in customs and transactions.
Yeah, exactly. And so far you seem to be holding up rather well, I would say.
I'm still smiling.
No, exactly. Well, Rupa Ganguly, CEO and founder of Inclusive Trade, thank you so much for joining us. All the best in your coming endeavors. I hope you remain a part of this network because your voice, as the voice of the expert consumer of customs services is a critical one here. But thank you so much for your observations and your wish list for change.
Oh, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, and I look forward to having further chats. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Pushing the Envelope, Life at the Cutting Edge of Customs Innovation, a podcast that profiles leaders in customs and their views, ideas, and inspirations about the future of customs innovation. Join us soon for our next Pencast and another insightful conversation with customs trendsetters and forward thinkers. Thank you.